Hi, I'm Kyle.
And I'm Robbie.
And we are the hosts of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
If you're like us, then you're basking in the glow of a great comic book movie summer.
So if you want to join the discussion on Thunderbolts, Superman, or Fantastic Four, and what makes those films so great, or take a look back at the Marvel Cinematic Universe and its illustrious history,
then check out Friends from Work wherever you get your podcasts, and we will see you there.
Hi everyone, Captain Ian here, just to let you know that there was somewhat of a communication systems failure across this Enterprise. During this episode, my mic blew up, Danae's mic is blowing up a little bit, and our special guest Jonathan Watkins was using an internet connection that was also currently blowing up. We just wanted to give you a heads up that the audio quality might be slightly different this week, but next week, normal services should be resumed. Your patience is appreciated and noted in your permanent record. Everything about this episode has a fun premise to it.
But it's also incredibly serious and depressing.
Yes. Captain Spot, Stardate 1917-25.1. Welcome aboard the Starship's Enterprise, and thank you for joining us as we take a brief shore leave from the world of CinemaSins to explore the universe of Star Trek. I'm your Captain Ian Whittington, and with me this week, there's three bloody A's, one bloody D, but no bloody C or B. It's Ambassador Danae and Jonathan Watkins.
I understand that reference. Jonathan, I don't know that you will.
Hello!
Can you guess the episode it's from?
Hint.
I'll if I was listening, I might have understood it, but...
The podcast or the intro?
Yes.
The intro.
Amazing. We have got... I can't remember what your rank was. It was acting ensign. I think we made you a full ensign. So I think with each appearance, nice, we'll promote you. So it's Lieutenant Junior Grade. Jonathan Watkins is back with us. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing good. How are you guys? Thank you for having me.
We love having you on board the ship. Now, this is amazing because Danae was not supposed to be here this week, but she has beamed in without any permission or regard for my show notes. So we have a busy bridge.
Sorry about that.
You're not sorry at all.
I was trying to think of something I could say that was like, well, you didn't know that it was happening, but the ship that beamed me aboard your ship knew about it.
Yeah, I have questions about that ship. I don't even know what that ship was.
Danae, we were about to give the audiences everything they wanted. Two white guys podcasting. And
I fucked it up.
You fucked it up.
You ruined it.
You ruined it.
You ruined it.
You ruined the dynamic.
Making us too diverse.
Great.
There's not enough two white guys podcasting going on today.
Especially talking about Star Trek. Like that realm, which just...
Yeah. It's just about so time we had a voice.
Yeah.
Well, this week, Jonathan has picked for us, he stuck to the same rules, picking out a personal favorite episode of Star Trek to cover. Mm-hmm. And you landed on Living Witness, which is season 4, episode 23 of Voyager.
After I sent you like 30, we landed on...
You sent me like many, and we had a bit of a debate and back and forth. Yep. A couple I think we'd covered already. But there was a few that made the short list. Do you want to talk about a couple of the others that didn't make it and why you landed on Living Witness?
I specifically did DS9 and Voyager. You guys do a lot of, obviously, the new stuff and a lot of TNG. I thought about original series for a second, but I'm in the middle of a rewatch of that, and I'm in a weird like place where I'm trying to like, I don't know. I don't need to get all that. But anyways, I'm rewatching it, and I didn't know if I'd have a lot of good answers to Danae being like, that's really sexist what's going on, and
we've covered that.
Original series, it's like, it's great writing and there's a lot of good things about it, but there's so much where you're just like, god,
I just wish this show hadn't been in the 60s. Like, that's the vibe that I always get.
60s, it's quite, yes, it's quite, you know,
progressive.
Progressive, yes. So very Shatner aggressive too. So Deep Space Nine and Voyager, I just thought I'd choose one of those because I Enterprise is something I watched when it was on and I haven't really rewatched it. So I have episodes, but I just don't, my knowledge of it is not as good. Deep Space Nine, I thought about doing Duet, which was like a
great episode.
I think last first season episode where, and for a lot of people, probably the episode where they were like, oh, I'm on board. This is an interesting show now. And now I can't remember anything else. What else did I pick? Oh, I thought about Year of Hell, but that was a two-parter. So
yeah, there was another Voyager episode.
Well, you guys had done Time? It's not Timescape because that's Next Generation. What's the Voyager one? It's
Timeless.
What you guys did with Timeless? Daniel. So, huh?
Timeless.
Timeless, yes.
Yeah, I think that's the one.
But no, I did Tinker Tenor Doctor Spy was another one I played around with.
That nearly won. There's just like, there's a couple of problematic bits in there.
Yeah, there are.
I don't want to get into that today. So that's why Living Witness felt like a really fun episode. Ambassador, based on the very brief title, Living Witness, and the fact that this is Voyager, give us one prediction about what we're about to walk into.
Okay, so an entire planet is dead. There's only one witness remaining, and Voyager comes across them, and they talk to this person, and then it's like, it's kind of like a mystery, like a whodunit. And then the Voyager, because they're just wackadoo, batshit crazy, they have no rules, they just go and they murder everybody else in retaliation.
Have you seen this episode?
It's hilarious that you're not, that last bit, it's like you were very far off, and then you threw that last bit in, and it was like, huh, that's kind of what you this were, is.
You were close, then you were miles off, and then you got really close again. That's incredible. I cannot wait to talk about that in 10 forward. Okay, your prediction has been entered into the log. We're going to head over to the holodeck and watch the episode that Danae just described, and we'll see you in 10 forward for a full debrief. Welcome to 10 Forward, the part of the show where we grab something from the replicator and share our immediate thoughts and feelings on the episode that we just watched together. Most important question first, Lieutenant Jonathan, what would you like from the replicator?
You know, since we're covering Voyager, this is not this episode specifically, although Janeway was having coffee at one point, but there was like an early episode in season one, I think, where Neelix was trying to get them to not use the replicators, and there's like this super like thick, like gunky coffee that he makes. Do you know what I'm talking about, Ian?
It's like pure syrup.
For some weird reason, I've always wanted to know what that tasted like. So I'm going to go with gunky Neelix coffee.
It's amazing that you mentioned that, because there is another thing that Neelix made that I've morbidly always wanted to try. And it's when he's trying to cook a radiation sickness like potion thing, and he's worried that the inoculation won't be enough, so he's eating this like green sludge that tastes like horrible, but it makes him immune to radiation. And I've always wanted to try it because it looks like a Thai green curry, and just morbidly, like whenever I watch that episode, I'm like, I would eat that. I would try some of Neelix's radiation medicine,
and you wouldn't get radiation poisoning. So
and I wouldn't. I would be irradiated, but I wouldn't get radiation poisoning. Ambassador.
I just want a sexy pair of evil black gloves.
Oh my god!
What is that? Like,
that is how you show someone that they are dark and evil and naughty.
Yeah, one of the aliens went to the George Lucas School of Eviling Things. And just made everything really
half
dark
face
and
tattoos and give Janeway short hair, make her look like a Karen.
Her hair looks incredible.
Incredible. Okay, here we go.
Yeah, I love it. Are you kidding? I may have issues. I'm going to steal what I want from the chat. Which is just one of the black turtlenecks, because I think that's a great addition to the uniform. I think that's amazing. That is definitely someone that was like, look, I didn't want gray or purple or whatever color it is. I wanted black undershirts. And damn it, this is the episode where I'm allowed to do it.
There you go.
Ambassador, give us a synopsis.
Okay. Apparently, my joke about what was going to happen in this episode as a prediction was what was going to happen in this episode.
Let's do a very quick recap. Danae's prediction was the entire planet is dead, apart from one survivor. Voyager wants to find out why, because they do. There's a murder mystery, who done it. Voyager finds out and ends up avenging them by killing the entire species that attacked them. And as you get to the back end of that, you're like, wait a minute, that's pretty close.
yeah, this is an interesting episode where it's a, how do you encapsulate this one? This is a storyteller's approach to historical revisionist history, where it brings the hologram from Voyager to life inside of a museum 700 years in the future. And the museum is portraying Voyager as this deadly warcraft, and the two warring races have kind of unified in their hatred of Voyager, which has brought about a sense of peace. But when the Doctor is discovered and his hologram comes back and he begins to say that's actually not what happened at all, another war breaks out, and then we zoom even further into the future where now there is true peace after, you know, some version of the truth has kind of revealed itself and everybody has just calmed down. But you're inside this as a mystery. You're kind of like seeing it unfold in a curious fashion, where like the first 5 minutes, you're just watching all these characters that if you've ever watched Voyager, mm-hmm. you're like, this isn't them at all.
Wait a minute.
Chat was mentioning something about a mirror universe vibe.
Yeah.
And I have not seen very many mirror universe episodes, so I always forget that that's a thing.
I don't think we've covered any on the show yet. I think we've dipped into it with Discovery, but we haven't actually done one yet. But yeah, that's an easy assumption to make based on the cold open.
Yeah, and Voyager never had one.
No.
So this is kind of like, I guess, if you're going to do mirror universe episodes throughout Star Trek and you went to Voyager and there wasn't one, this would be as, I guess, close as it was.
But this is so much better. So like mirror stuff really was DS9's realm. So I think they were worried about like conflicting with that, because Deep Space Nine has like 7 mirror episodes or 6, something like that. So I think there wasn't much need to do it in Voyager, but they still manage it. And I think this is better.
Well, and TNG never did one either. It was just the original series had one, and then DS9 had, yeah, like 5 or something. And then Enterprise had a couple.
Yeah, Enterprise has my favorite ones with the alternate Defiant. Anyway, before we get nerdy and dive into that, before I do your overall thoughts and feelings, Danae, I wanted to jump to Jonathan and say what, obviously, are your overall thoughts and feelings, because you picked this episode this week and you absolutely love it. Why this episode?
So yeah, this is, I was actually listening to somebody talk about this episode the other day on another podcast, and they were talking about, and I agree with this, and I think this is why I love this one and why I love all the best episodes of Voyager, because this actually feels 100% like a Voyager episode. Like this, I don't know that this episode works on any of the other series. And unfortunately for Voyager, one of its probably negatives is that Berman, or I don't know, I shouldn't just blame Berman, but the powers that be at the time with, there was a lot going on, I think, when Voyager launched, and it was trying to launch a network, an entirely new network and all this kind of stuff. So I think they just decided they wanted to play it a little safer than I think a lot of us going into Voyager thought. We thought the premise of Voyager would actually make it different, and then it kind of ended up just becoming like another TNG original series clone. A lot of the times they would just take ideas from those shows and then they would do their own version on it. Sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. But that's, you know, it is what it is. It's the show we have. And for the most part, it's really good. This season is maybe its best season. You had Scorpion, and you had the Herogen. Is it Herogen? Something like that.
Herogen
storyline.
Yeah.
Message in a Bottle, which is a lot of people's favorite episode. My personal favorite episode is the season finale, a couple episodes after this, called Hope and Fear, which I actually talked about at Sin Week a few years ago. So
yeah, I think you talk about it every opportunity that you get, which is fair, because it's great. It's so good.
Yeah. But anyway, but going back, so this is towards the end of the season 4, and I don't know, it's just, it's a really, I like how they're kind of going at revisionist history. And I think it's also very weirdly, I didn't think about this when I picked it, but it's very relevant to a lot of stuff that's going on now. And it's going to be interesting to see what people talk about now, and you know how they refer to what's going on in the world currently in 20 years or 700 years, definitely. I love Picardo. Picardo, I think, is if not the best actor on the show, he's one of them. And so anytime he gets to just kind of do his own thing, And it really is like his episode because Voyager.
I'm sorry. Picardo is Captain Picard with an O on the mm-hmm. end. So who is the person you're talking about?
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Exactly?
I don't know why I'm just throwing out last name. Robert Picardo, who plays the doctor.
His name is Picardo.
Yeah, it's amazing.
His last
isn't
name
it?
Is, yeah. Sorry. I'm just.
No. You don't have to apologize for knowing far more than I do.
No, but Robert Picardo, who had done a lot of stuff. He was probably, well, him or Mulgrew were probably the most known when the show started. Anyways, but yeah, I love Picard. I love Robert Picardo, and you know, it's almost all him this episode. So that's a lot of fun for
really
me too.
Is.
Yeah, and it's just a fun episode. It's like we've already talked about. It's kind of a mirror thing. Like if Voyager was going to do a mirror episode, this is kind of what it would be like. I think it's hilarious that the way they decided to make everybody bad was, as Danae already mentioned, to give them black gloves.
Why is she wearing black gloves? What's happening?
It's easy. It's easier than character development. You just give them black gloves.
Chakotay's face tattoo might take it down half a star, though. That's all I'm saying. That thing is
a lot.
And Robert Beltran's performance. Honestly, all of it's just not great. But everybody, well, and that's the other thing. I like how people's like, especially Kate Mulgrew and Robert Picardo, when we're watching the revisionist history version of them, they're clearly having a lot of fun.
They're eating it up. Yeah. They are chewing up being evil, and it works because it's part of a simulation.
And not everybody is as successful, you know, Garrett Wong, but, most of them are.
And anybody that isn't, I put it down to poor programming. It's not. Yes. It's not the actor's fault. It's deliberately over the top. I love this episode. Danae, overall thoughts and feelings. How did this hit you, especially as a person who hasn't seen a lot of Voyager?
Yeah, I pieced out of Voyager after it started to take over my beloved TNG time. And I was just getting, I think, like to a point where I wasn't as into Star Trek. And so
ouch.
I watched.
Ow.
I know. That's why we're doing the show.
That's it.
So my memories of Voyager are usual. I think it's probably season one, I'm guessing.
Okay.
That's
the best.
Probably. I have nothing else to compare it to. It's just my imagination from so many years ago. Mm-hmm. So watching a full episode is really interesting. Watching one where it is not actually the crew is also interesting because obviously something is wrong. Starfleet is killing people and having a good time doing it. She says his name incorrectly. She says Chakotay or something.
Chakotay. Yeah. Just kind of changes the emphasis on one of the syllables, but everyone else does
it. That makes
it as
him
well.
Evil.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and her hair was wrong. And I'm thinking, I don't remember any of this. What is happening?
Oh, no. I didn't even think about that. I didn't think that there might be a world where you're like, oh, I guess this is how the arc developed. I guess, like, what was the point where you're like, oh, wait, no. This definitely isn't right.
So in our podcast conversations over the past few years, one of the things that will be brought up when referencing Voyager, and this is true for the chat, this is like just casual 2-3-line conversation zingers, is how evil Janeway is. And so I'm like going, wow, so this is after she's gone full on looking
crazy. Oh, no.
Well, to be fair, she committed genocide earlier in the season. So.
Right. So I'm thinking, okay, so
or
she
agreed
commits
to genocide.
I guess. She legit does. That's not even an exaggeration.
No, she makes a bargain and takes out an entire species.
At least
and
one.
I remember this happening, and I'm thinking, oh, I'm watching this happen, but it was the pacing of it, the way that the storytelling is of this episode, before we see the credits of the show in the first 4.5 mm-hmm. minutes. It is just to the wall on so many uncomfortable things you don't usually see in mm-hmm. Starfleet. And so I thought what was going to happen is that everything was a setup, like they were being observed by the species that was wanting, so the ambassador like comes onto their ship and is saying that they want to have aid, well, or that they want to attack their enemy, the Kirans or whatever. That guy, I thought maybe everything else was a play into it to get to earn his trust.
Oh, interesting.
And so
yeah,
they were going over the top so that they would have him kind of on their side and they could maybe barter or bargain, turn the tide.
Got it, yeah.
And then, but then when it got to the torture, I thought, okay,
very much.
Potentially, it's not the torture. Potentially, what's happening here is, like, they're playing up the torture because they know that they're being watched. So they're not actually torturing. Mm-hmm. They're just playing it up, you know.
But then Janeway shoots someone in the back. You're like, okay.
And I thought, okay, so they're acting. So the Kirins are in on it too. And I kept changing it in my mind to get even more complex. So by the time we get to the reveal that this is all a simulation, that somebody is playing in a museum, I was really invested and also like, whoa, we're not even a third. This is maybe a third of the way through this episode.
Yeah, not even.
And so much has already happened. So I was really enjoying it. I thought it was a really unique take on an episode because it builds a lot of what you think is the episode in the first third. And then it breaks that down in the middle third and begins to question itself and question history and, you know, bring in kind of the meat and the potatoes of the episode of what they're trying to make you feel uncomfortable with, which is the Doctor defending the truth that Voyager wasn't this terrible ship doing these terrible things. And then the final bit is, it's not even the resolution. It's the resolution in this really unique way of going, does our take on history matter right now? If more people are going to die, let's just keep making Voyager the bad guy, if that's what unified everybody. And then the flip into, and that was also in the past. And then throughout all of it is this character that I think most people who watch Voyager really love, and getting a chance to kind of go, oh yeah, what would happen to this hologram if it was left floating in space and found somewhere for 700 years and it pops into existence and says, I wonder what happened to my buddies. And that was really unnerving to me because he exists forever. And it's kind of like playing a little bit into his story isn't done. So we went really far into the future in this really unique way, hitting on a topic that's really like important to discuss.
Doing what good Star Trek does.
Yeah. And all to something that was really intense. This is about war. This is about racism. It's a really serious episode. So I mean, it's a good one, but not in the way where it's like, oh, let's go have a fun adventure with Picard whenever he, you know, is wearing a low cut shirt and
he's on holiday on Risa. Yeah.
Yeah. This is good TV, good writing, good, like, let's sit down and have a conversation afterwards and go, how did you feel watching this? So I really enjoyed it, although it was very serious.
No, it's the summation of what Star Trek does best, which is I've seen this episode 30 times perhaps, and most of those times were as a child going into teen years. And I've seen it so many times before I even understand how important the message of choosing history, rewriting history, how like inconsistent your account can be, how you overlay your own biases on. Before I've even contemplated those big heady topics, I've enjoyed it as an episode again and again, and I've rewatched it again and again. So it's this insidious thing where an entertaining episode of Star Trek entertains you, and then maybe later you realize, oh wait, I learned something. Shit, like, it actually had something really important to say. And that's where Star Trek succeeds so much, is when it's entertaining and has that message, and it manages to not beat you over the head and patronize you or preach to you. It puts it into an entertaining pocket as well, which is like, if you can pull that off, that is, whatever your genre is, whatever story you're trying to tell, that's spot on. That's incredible.
It could have done something where it said, I want to have an opinion about who's right, the Kirins or the Tirins,
the
Kirins
and the Vaskins.
Yeah, those guys. But it doesn't. It continues to say, I'm not trying to figure out who's right or who's wrong here. I just want people to survive. So it kind of tried to like not get too lost in the details. But there's so much that happens in this episode to talk about.
Yeah, no, so. One of my favorite things is the balance that it has between, it still doesn't say who the villains are, because it doesn't necessarily have to be. Like, okay, the Kirians were the aggressors in the past, but it's interesting that they're now dealing with oppression 700 years in the future, and it seems like they genuinely are being ostracized and abused. So the episode deliberately doesn't try to villainize, I think, either side of the conflict, or makes them all villains, makes them all as complex as possible. Jonathan, what's some of your highlights from the episode? What's some of the stuff that you love?
Yeah, I'm glad you guys brought up. I love that you guys brought up the entertain it versus you also kind of like there's a message there, because I think the writing on this one is what makes it stand out, because just from taking screenplay writing classes, like one of the main things they tell you is like, don't write a message. Like if your story is good enough, all that will just kind of come out of it. And I think this is a great example.
Yeah.
Of that happening. And like Ian said, this is like a perfect blend of like the more actiony Star Trek mixed with the interesting story that has, you know, something to say at the end of the day. As far as highlights, I mean, just watching everybody having a blast, you know, just getting to be evil, getting to play a different type of character, is a lot of fun. Even Garrett, I know somebody's already said, why are you being mean to Garrett? I'm sorry. I love Garrett Wong. He seems like a really, really nice guy. He's great. He's great with fans too. So love, he's awesome.
Yeah. He loves it.
And you know, and I think Garrett unfortunately was one of the cast members that just didn't get as much to do on the show. So it is what it is. But everybody's having a good time. I already mentioned I love Robert Picardo in this episode. I think this is one of his better performances. I just loved all the conflict in the 700 years later between everybody. I just thought that was great writing, where you've got the people from all different sides and they all have their own reason why they want the story to go a certain way.
Yeah.
And I found that conundrum fascinating. If there's anything I have to complain about, it's that they have to wrap this up, because I don't know that this would necessarily be like a two-parter, but I do feel like it needs like 10 or 12 more, like 15 more minutes just to kind of flesh everything out. It feels a little abrupt. Like it just kind of cuts to the even farther in the future, like Danae mentioned, and then it's like, oh, everything was fine. Like, we fixed it.
And I think that's the sign of a good episode. Like, you want it, you can't really articulate why you want it to be longer, but you just don't want it to end. Like, there is so many interesting things to explore here. And it really kind of does only work in Voyager, because you have to have that situation where Voyager is so far away that it can't defend itself. Starfleet can't defend itself against this anymore. And you have to have a character like the Doctor that can be left behind. Like, TNG doesn't even have anybody. Like, Data could be left behind, but then you know that's the end of Data's story. Like, with the Doctor, because this is a backup, it works perfectly, because our Doctor still exists, but this version of him is stuck in the future. And, like, for me, that broke my heart, knowing that it's such a mindfuck that this Doctor turns up and he kind of knows that he's not the quote-unquote real Doctor. He's a backup program. So the real Doctor carries on his adventure and goes on with Voyager, and this one is... Like, the very first thing he does is has to reconcile, wow, did my friends make it home? Even if they did make it home, they're dead now. Like, 700 years is just a mind-blowing amount of time to be removed. It's just everything about this episode has a fun premise to it.
Agree.
But it's also incredibly serious and depressing.
Yes. I say fun. I mean serious, depressing, and all of that stuff as well. And these type of episodes, particularly for me, are fun sandboxes, because... I can imagine the writer's room and they're just like, what would happen if there was an evil Voyager? And we mentioned earlier, like, how Janeway does some genocidal things. And I imagine, like, even at this time, there were people that were just like, man, this isn't Star Trek. Like, they're making some really questionable decisions. And I like to think that this episode is the writers being like, no, if they were actually making questionable decisions, and if they were actually bastards, this is what the ship would actually look like. And you've got a contingent of Borg drones mm-hmm. on board. You have way more weapons. You have a ruthless Janeway that will make deals with anyone on any level in order to get home, and using their medicine to torture people in unique ways. And I love that, getting to play around. I love the idea that they got to just, what would we like to do that Star Trek won't let us do?
Yeah, there's a, they get to play in that sandbox because it's a simulation.
Yes,
exactly.
You know, if it wasn't a simulation, we wouldn't have seen this episode, because there wasn't anything to risk by showing us what a war captain looks like when they just fire as much as they can on a civilization, on an innocent civilians in order to achieve their goal. And it's so scary to watch. But like a lot of times when you're watching shows, whether it's a movie or a TV show, there is a way that the pacing goes, which is bad guy expresses what they're about to do, gives your brain a second to go, oh, that's not good. And then there's always, they explain it or something, they exposit their story, and then someone comes in and stops them before they do it. Like, rarely do you get to see a captain turn to Tuvok, who's now evil, and say, you're disappointing me, you need to be firing like a like, lot more.
Keep going, come on.
You stop because of what, ... Or, okay, a doctor who, you know, you have nothing but time on your hands. And can you please just, you know, create something to melt this person's brain so I can get the information I want? And then it's actually happening in front of you. You don't just hear it. And then the good guy comes and saves the day. Or, oh, no, somehow our ship has been rocked and we've lost power and we can't complete our bad villainous idea because we're in this simulation sandbox. We get to see that story play out. Well, where you're right, Ian, this is an opportunity for the writers to go, well, if we just did have an evil captain that was on a warship that would do whatever, let's see them do the whatever. And watching your favorite characters do the bad things makes you feel a little, some kind of a way. For me, it was easier to watch because I haven't watched them a lot. But like for you guys, I'm curious with the beginning specifically, or just like the when the episode shows you the museum's version of history, did it make you, I don't, maybe you can't remember the first time that you watched
this. Oh, no, I can.
Did it make you angry? Did it make you, like, how did you feel? I'm curious, like, did it bother you a lot to watch that happen?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I'm a fan of it felt to me like kind of just like their own, like a different type of Mirror Mirror Universe episode, which I always enjoy. And I don't remember like the first, I mean, I would have watched it when it aired, and I mean, I would have already kind of known what was going on anyways, because they probably would have shown it in the trailer the previous week or whatever, you know, next week on Star Trek Voyager.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know exactly how I don't remember exactly what my mindset was, but I remember thinking it was a better episode than what, yeah, like this whole season was a lot of fun, because I was probably, towards the end of season three, I was probably was thinking about just not watching the show anymore. The Scorpion two-parter that ended season three and started season four was interesting enough to keep me going for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then this season just kept getting a little better as it went along. So this season's probably responsible for me even continuing to finish the series. And this episode would be one of those. So I just remember thinking it was a really cool idea. It was a really well-executed kind of what-if scenario. I think somebody mentioned what-if in the comments earlier. I think that's a great way to describe this episode. And better than basically any actual what-if episode that we've seen.
Oh!
They always seem to go not far enough or too far, don't they? But this one finds a balance.
I don't remember. Like, I don't remember... I just remember like thinking it was a really good episode. I don't remember much beyond that. I just would have been a Wednesday night in college in my dorm, probably. I was watching this.
So. What about you, Ian? What did you feel? Like, was it betrayal? Because it was pretty.
I remember, I don't know if this would have come into my head from like when I first watched it, because I think I would have been 9 or 10 when this, no, 7 or 9 or 8 or 9 when this came on TV. So I wouldn't have watched it until my dad had bought the VHS or there was a rerun on the TV or something. But what has always stuck out to me is the structure of it is really like cruel to begin with and then immediately rewarding and then frustrating, because to begin with, mm-hmm. you have this account of Voyager that's pretty quickly revealed that it's a retelling of history in a museum hundreds and hundreds of years later, but no one is there to defend Voyager and to defend my Starfleet. And I'm just like, how are they, like, I know they're going to uncover some evidence and they're going to try and set it straight, because it's kind of easy to see that's where the story is going to go. But I'm like, how? Because I imagine like the injustice of having my story told. Let's say I had a story important enough to be told 700 years from now, but to have it told by people who don't know and have got the facts wrong and are teaching it with such confidence, and I'm sure we're doing it now in lots of ways, but having that injustice is really cool. And then the Doctor turning up and the relief of, oh, that's great. He's the perfect person to come. He's a computer program. They can find the truth from him and he can speak on behalf of our crew and he can clear their name up. And then he's not believed because, damn it, we don't listen to science and we don't listen to proof so often. If it's uncomfortable truths or it's something that changes our nice little worldview that we've put together and just how he has to fight against that. So, yeah, I remember at some point feeling the injustice of no one being there to defend Voyager and then the Doctor swooping in to save the day. And it's so well done.
I think another thing about probably I wasn't like upset or anything is because also, and one of this is a weakness of Star Trek, especially at the time, was there weren't always a lot of stakes. So it's not like I thought something was going to happen that was like irreversible because they just didn't do that back then on Star Trek. You know, you didn't have like someone like, you know, Michael, like, killing, you know, millions of people and all that kind of stuff, like on Discovery. I mean, I guess you kind of did with Janeway. I don't know.
Starting an entire war.
yeah, exactly. So I guess that probably factored into, like, I never really was, like, invested that in that way, I guess. I was just kind of more just concentrating on whatever that particular story that episode was telling. So Voyager wanted to be that kind of show.
Yeah.
I've listened to interviews with the writers and stuff, and, you know, they, like, Year of Hell, for instance, that was supposed to be an entire season. And Rick Berman and company were like, yeah, we're not doing that. So it became a two-parter. So they wanted to explore things with Voyager in the way that no other show was doing at the time. But I think they were just a little ahead of their time. And I think it also irritated, because Deep Space Nine was kind of getting away with that, because Ira Stephen Bear, from what I understand, was like, I don't really care what you say. I'm going to do what I want to do. And, you know, so I guess they didn't have that luxury over, I don't know who was really running at this time. Jerry Taylor, maybe? Brandon Braga? I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I think so. I think that makes sense. Yeah.
It's interesting that you mentioned that you know not to invest that it's evil, like that this is true. But it's more that they play on the idea that there's an entire civilization somewhere in the future that thinks that Voyager was bad. Mm-hmm. And that injustice is hard to reconcile. Yeah. And so writers to kind of play on the idea that, like, your best case scenario of what actually happened from your perspective and this is true for life in general. And I have to talk to my daughter about this, you know, as she's gaining friends, is like, sometimes you just have to know that you did your best. You didn't say that. That wasn't your intention. And you can't convince the other person otherwise. You just have to know in your heart that you did what you thought you were supposed to do. And it's really difficult when you know that somebody is misunderstanding you or that you feel misrepresented, or like your best intentions to be loved and accepted by all is impossible. There's always going to be somebody that just does not like you for whatever reason. And you can't mold and change yourself to that. But when the show is like, yeah, maybe Voyager isn't for everybody, but it's more than that. It's like an entire civilization has been able to vilify these people that you know aren't that. Like, I can imagine watching this with TNG and being like, no, that's not my captain.
Quit it.
So it's such a clever thing to kind of take something beloved and go, yeah, we know that you guys won't believe that this is true, but these people believe it's true. And how does that feel? So. Yeah. I think that's the depth of this.
Yeah, I agree.
This goes that hits on a more cerebral level, kind of like a deeper writing level or a deeper storytelling level, where I don't just check out because it's a mirror episode. So we know they're evil and it's what they're supposed to do. It's more like, okay, well, what is this episode trying to tell me now? Because what is the story? We're just going to pop into this little sector of the universe somewhere and see what happened when they encountered Starfleet. And then we're going to never see these people again, potentially. This is just like one of those episodes where you just sort of like pop in, pop out. Yep. But they don't just do that. They also bring in the idea of the Doctor existing, the Doctor having their own story, the Doctor sticking around and helping their civilization, the Doctor having a longing. So they give more to it so that when you walk away, you're like, I have so many different things I can think about. Not
absolutely.
Just historical implications. Yeah. But not just storytelling implications, but like, if I love Voyager, then I get to have a moment where I get to see, you know, this character. It kind of reminds me of checking in with the ship, the ship character.
Zora.
Yeah, what was that? What show was that one?
Discovery.
Yeah. So there was like, what happens to the ship character? Or like, even I think in Prodigy also, when we watched season one, when I visited, there was an episode two about Janeway being a hologram and her being copied over as well. And so this idea of personality existing kind of like in different sequence. There's just a bunch to think about watching this one. So even though it was heavy and serious, there from even just like how they put it together, the storytelling, I was really impressed. And I didn't mind the acting either. I think it must have been a really fun day on set, to be honest.
Oh, completely agree. One of the reasons that I like this better as it is, as this like this simulation that's been misinterpreted, rather than it being a Mirror Universe episode. Because
I agree.
When I see my biggest down, I like the Mirror Universe episodes, but my biggest downside is how mustache twirly everybody is. All of like the evil people in Starfleet are the evilest people you could imagine, and it's hard for me to like buy into it as anything more than a holodeck program. Whereas this, it makes sense because this guy isn't writing a dramatic play, like he is subconsciously playing everything up. So I get the extra layers of villainy because I'm watching a bit of a hammy theater show that has like entertained people in a museum more than anything. So it gets a lot more buy-in from me.
That's a really interesting point.
I was gonna say I don't have IMDb pulled up or anything, but I love the actor that plays the main guy,
the museum curator guy.
The guy who runs the museum. I think that actor does a really good job, and I think the writing's great there too, where you can see the conflict that he's going through he wants his version to be true because it paints his race in a much brighter light. Talk about relevant stuff today. But then he also still wants to know the truth because he's a good person. And I mean, I would assume at least the episode doesn't give us any reason to think he's not. And, he wants everything to be correct. Like he thinks the accuracy of the history is more important than anything. So that's an interesting conflict. There's a lot of interesting conflicts going on in this.
One of my favorite things about the museum curator character is the conflict, but you're kind of watching this person who has spent so much of their life obsessed with Voyager and what it means and has carefully pieced together. Like there's a couple of times that he defends how well put together his curated museum artifacts are. For example, like the schematics of the ship that they found in the ocean that had taken some damage. And so they had to take some liberties, but he's kind of like defending the liberties because his intention was to give it the best care that he could with the information that he had. And you can kind of feel like he's not really the bad guy. No. He was genuinely attempting to give his people this historical moments that the, we don't want to forget what really happened here moment, but then going, well, what really did happen here? And then the feeling that he must feel when that all starts to unravel, when he finds something and realizes it's the program, and then he shuts it off mid-sentence, like, I can't. He's literally face-to-face with all of his hard work, no matter how much care he had, is still wrong.
And he just slams the book shut. It's like, I don't like what this book is saying. I'm going to throw it away. I'm going to burn it, as a particular metaphor that springs to mind.
Yeah, and so I like that he does come back and say, no, I need to know more. But the show presses in further and says, well, it's not just about this guy. He has bosses too, you know? So then we're seeing even more conflict. And there's really a lot in this episode because it could be really simplified in a way. Mm-hmm. That could have just been his decision. Maybe it was his own private collection, but they even went that the curator had authority over him that had to make decisions. And it was very much a well thought out society. Like there's all these little lines that pepper through this episode to give you an idea of the existing conflict, the past conflict. Like even when the administrative lady says something like, my kids can't even go to the school in the center of town. You know, just these little things to let us know. And then there's a fucking coup at the end when people come in and start destroying things. And at that point, you're like, no, no, not this guy's hard work. Even though it's all wrong. No.
Stop destroying those props. Well, the interesting thing is that it's the Vaskins that come in and start destroying everything, even though it's the professor's work or the curator's work that is now going to redeem them to some degree in the eyes of, like, the present. So it's so, to not make, because you could say that, like, the victors rewrite history, that's the famous thing, or they, the history is written by the victors, but by all accounts the Kyrians weren't the victors, so they're writing this version of history that's wrong, and they still ended up on the losing side. It's just you're right, it's so complicated. And I love the curator who the actor is Henry Woronich. I can't pronounce his last name, apologies, but he's incredible. He is hopefully who we're supposed to be. Like, this is an example, and a very, like, kind of honest example of who to be in this situation. Like, yeah, instinctually your first knee-jerk reaction will be, shut up, that's not my history, quit it. But eventually, like, he's intellectually honest enough to say, well, if I got the fact that the Doctor is an android wrong, who's to say what else I got wrong? And he's brave enough to come back to the table and say, this is going to be hard, but okay, let's start with some more facts and let's see what we can actually make out of this. And that's the hardest position to take as well.
That would have been great if the Doctor at one point was like, we didn't even own gloves.
Okay, wanted to.
But that's there's the heart of the story, and then there's the fun of the story, right? And the fun is that we do get to see the gloves. We do get to see Seven of Nine as a fucking Borg assimilating people. We do get to
see
Captain Janeway, like, just fucking mark people. Like, it is a episode that's like, okay, I know this isn't right, but I'm really having fun watching this, because Seven of Nine as a Borg was so, I've never seen that, because I didn't watch this show fully. I've only seen one version of Seven of Nine. I've never seen her as a Borg before. That's my first time. And I was like,
oh, that's so interesting. Really, I had shocking. No idea. Oh, that's so fun.
Yeah. It was so shocking. Like, she's like doing the, it sounded like a drill, but they were like little tiny piercers into the neck.
That's how you assimilate people.
And I'm like, man, that is brutal and so cool all at the same time. That somehow on this ship were also little Borg pods. Just that somebody had taken four or five different novels that had fallen apart and then, like, put them back together in the wrong order, and like put Voyager together the total wrong way, but yet you're still like, oh, that's cool.
Oh, I love it. While we're talking about interpretations of history, there's one other thing that I love doing these rewatches, because this is something I've only noticed on this watch, and it's the fact that even the Doctor's bias plays into his recreation of the true events as he remembers them as a computer. It's very subtle, but it kind of makes you wonder, what else did he amp up? Because when they start off, and Janeway is very softly speaking to the ambassador and just like, we're going to have your supplies, we'll get the dilithium, you're being very generous, I know how you feel. She does her little like combat to the Doctor and says, arrange for the supplies to be put into the cargo bay. And the Doctor is not only saying yes, he's already done it. He's already beamed the supplies over there, because the Doctor is painting himself as this very efficient person. And when you get to the hostage situation, he says, I'll go in first. I've never seen him be that brave. Like, we know he's a hologram, he knows that, but he's always still, fine, send the Doctor in, I guess it doesn't matter. He's never that brave. He never says, I will go in first, and I will do it because I will protect you, Janeway. I will protect you, Captain. So I was like, he's programmed that to paint himself in the best light possible. And I hope that was deliberate. It might be me reading too much into it, but it's so perfect that he also amps up this idyllic version of Voyager and how he is the hero of part of the story. And yeah, it's so true to the premise of the episode.
I wouldn't have caught that, because I haven't seen a lot of the show and to know his character enough, but he does say something very subtle about like the program being as close to as he can think of it, you know?
So, yep.
Mass is there if you want to catch it.
Yeah, I love that so much. It's so much thought that even our true recreation will have biases in it. It's unavoidable. I love it.
Oh, yeah.
Jonathan, you mentioned that Tim Russ directs this episode, which is something I'd never realized or actually noticed. And I love the idea that Tuvok is the one that directs this like very violent episode.
Oh yeah. We did find out that Tim Russ directed this. I also saw that somebody was mentioning there was no B'Elanna Torres. I also saw that Roxanne Biggs Dawson was she had just had her baby, so that's why she was not on it. So. Even though they do mention B'Elanna quite a bit.
Give us some pips, Ambassador.
I'm going to say this one is a 3 out of 4, I think. It has a lot of things I really like. And one thing I'll mention that I really enjoyed also that kind of like makes it into the 3-pipper for me is when we finally do get to see a little bit more of what really happened, although, yes, skews the Doctor's vision, it reminded me about what Voyager feels like normally. And I really love it. Janeway is such a dominating presence. She has
yes.
a commanding way. Like Picard is commanding as well. I mean, that's what you are. You're a commanding, you know, officer. But when they're being boarded, for example, there's just this efficiency in everything that they're doing. Like Tuvok is like, they're on this level. She's like going now. And it's just this very, this by the books moment, this level has been cleared, and then that's immediately followed by her saying we're entering into this one. It's like everything is by the books. There's no this is what it's like when they've taken all of TNG and the questions they had about the efficiency, and then they've just like gotten far more efficient with I don't know, it felt very military, more military yes. than I remember it being. I don't know, it just there was a level of intensity when it was the quote unquote correct version that mm-hmm. I forgot about Voyager that I like. Cause again, that's one of the things I like about Star Trek is that there seems to be some rules to this military operation, whether they're a science vessel or they're, you know, whatever kind of vessel it is, there's the command that makes you feel comfortable there. Yeah. And so that was the most accurate representation in this episode of what Voyager is usually like. And I really missed that. And it kind of makes me want to watch another episode of Voyager soon because I want to get a feel for the crew again. I don't know what we would watch,
spoiler,
but I'm curious.
There are more episodes of Voyager on the way for sure.
I'm going to go 3 pips on it because it had just about everything. There was action. There was mystery. There was shock value. There was heart. There was a character study. There's yeah. historical study. It's got kind of everything you want an episode to have. There was medical jargon and techno jargon and a tiny little bit of a space battle, just a little bit of one, some not phases. A lot. But yeah. But yeah, I thought it was good storytelling.
Yeah, I'm with you, but I'm going to give it a 4 pips. I like I said at the top of the show, this is just what Star Trek does best for me. It takes a topic. Wraps it up in an entertaining episode of television, has a bit of silliness with it, and just it knows the message that it's trying to communicate to us, and it does it really well, and it gets to have fun by making everybody evil and zappy zappy, and I get to see a version of Voyager that I never got to see with like extra phasers and stuff. It's like a 10-year-old was like, how are you gonna make Voyager cooler? We're gonna put more phasers on it. It's gonna have 38 torpedo tubes. I'm like, wow, 38, okay, that's a lot, but we're here for it.
And black gloves.
You gotta have the black gloves.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like playing with your action figures, right? It's like, oh, today they're going to be evil.
Exactly. How yeah. many pips out of 4, Jonathan?
Oh, this is a pretty easy 4 for me. This is, I think, a top 10 episode of the series. I think it's probably even like maybe even like nice. A top 25 episode of Trek. It's one of my favorites, so or at least top 50.
Yeah.
No, it's an easy 4 for me.
Yeah, like I said, 4 pips for me. I love it. It does so much. Let's head over to engineering and do some sins for what is, for a chunk of it, an unsinnable episode. 3 to beam to engineering.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs,
plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Warning. Warp core collapse in 10 seconds.
This is the part of the show where we re-engage our sin brains, remind ourselves that no TV show is without sin, even our beloved Star Trek. I mention it's almost impossible to sin because chunks of it, the point is to sin it. Like, the Doctor is cinema sins for a big chunk of this episode, pulling apart the inconsistencies and things that don't make sense. So I found myself writing stuff down where I was just like, no, but it's the simulation, so it's just an inaccurate retelling. So of course it doesn't make sense that certain things are happening this way. Jonathan, as our guest, you can go first.
Yeah, I mean, we've made a bunch of jokes about it, but I would be curious to see where he got all the ideas for, like, how they looked. Like, I just, like, why does Janeway have that haircut, and why are they wearing gloves, and, you know, just where did that face tattoo come from? Because Chakotay actually did have kind of a face tattoo, but, like, where, you know, I don't know. It was just all that I thought was, like, I was really, maybe that's more of a curiosity than a sin, but.
Yeah, yeah, I guess he's just extrapolating a lot. And so maybe there's a log that says, but he said he didn't even have any logs. So I don't even know where, like, yeah, he got the tattoo from. And I want to know, like, where this, like, schematic that fell into the ocean came from as well. Like, was Voyager just like, I know some stuff was stolen, but was, like, Voyager just shedding parts into the ocean? How did a schematic end up getting stolen during that brief invasion? But yeah, a lot of that is, I guess, just open to interpretation.
Or a torpedo, or
yeah, an entire torpedo.
Yeah, I guess, and this is probably a question I should have asked before the sins, but that's just what I do to things out of order. Is this the only time that we ever hear about this conflict, do you know,
between the Kyrians and the the doodahs, them?
Yeah, the Voyager.
Yes, yeah, this is the only time. Yeah,
okay. The doodahs, I believe so.
I think given like what we saw, it was also a bit confusing, like, what role did Voyager actually play? And I understand that that's not part of the episode, like, but we're not meant to actually know. Yeah, but there's just this sort of quick reference to, and I guess the Kirins or whomever stole my programming off of something at some point in time, but there seems to be a lot of things left over somehow. So if the real Voyager got back to Earth at some point, then they must have left some things behind that were here at this place. And I guess we'll never really understand that one. So maybe, I don't know how I would actually go about, like, writing that sin, but it is still a bit confusing how, like, what was left over from 700 years ago? Is it at that point, it's too long to really know for sure anyway? It doesn't matter.
Yeah, you're kidding? Like, 100 years and you start getting really sketchy. So I really tried to listen out this time around for it, because I was thinking, wait, what? Why was Voyager such a huge part of these people's history that 700 years ago they're still being talked about? And after that initial attack where the Kyrians beam over and they steal the stuff, the Doctor says that after that, Voyager was attacked by 9 ships. And that one sentence is, I think, where all of the stuff happens, because that's where the torpedo must have happened. Some stuff got stolen. They get involved in the battle. But I agree with you, Danae. Like, I can't understand why Voyager hung around in this conflict long enough to become a crucial part of their history. Like, it should have been, okay, bye, we've done our trade, we'll leave. Like, they really shouldn't be firing a single torpedo or hanging around long enough to be part of history.
Yeah, it was confusing. Like, they do have some things. They do, and they have an ability to recreate it. And that was very, very confusing. It's fun to see the things that they got wrong, but knowing how they got the reference for hair or personality, or yes, even that they got that one guy who kind of was like a womanizer or whatever, got him mostly right, as the joke is.
It's one of my favorite lines. You got everything wrong other than Tom Paris. You nailed him. It's so brutal. My biggest sin, and we can kind of blame Prodigy for this a little bit, is that Voyager, this is 4 years into Voyager's journey. He says that they're like 65,000 light years from home, which means they've already traveled about 20,000 or something like that. So in 700 years, what we're saying is that Starfleet never made it back to the Delta Quadrant to right this wrong and to talk to them themselves. I guess maybe they never made it to this planet, but with Prodigy, we know that they go back to the Delta Quadrant pretty quickly. And I can't imagine that during all 700, like it's taking us 200 years to get pretty established in the Alpha Quadrant, and we're heading into the Beta and Gamma Quadrant. 700 years later, there's still no Starfleet in the Delta Quadrant that can defend itself and set the story right. So it's one of those things that the more Star Trek we have, the more inaccurate that's going to be, unless we acknowledge that we never explored the Delta Quadrant until 3200.
No, I love this. I love this point. I didn't even think about this. But even then, are you telling me Voyager gets back from the Delta Quadrant and Starfleet doesn't think we should go do more investigating in the Delta Quadrant? Because, I mean, they would. They absolutely would. Even if we're saying that, I think you could still send it at that time, though, because just the idea that Voyager gets back after being stuck in this quadrant, Starfleet wouldn't get involved somehow and do, I don't know. Yeah, I think you're right, though. I think that's a good point.
One of my sins would be, did Voyager make it home cliche, which I only watched, again, very little of Voyager, but every fucking episode, it seemed to be that was something that they said, are we going to make it home? And that was the big hook for why you watched Voyager, is to see if they made it home. And so I just feel like when the doctor asks this question and then the curator is like, I've always wondered that too, I would just be like, we all were wondering it. And
well, it's the biggest sin of Voyager, because it is the hook. And to be honest, they do very little with it. Other than put them in a location that doesn't have Klingons, Romulans, Cardassians, you've got new aliens to talk about. It's not often that they actually deal with rations and running out of shuttles and torpedoes and food. It obviously comes up in a couple of episodes, but
they still use the holodeck constantly. They're just using, what a waste of
Don't
energy.
Don't use the holodeck. It's insane. You've got Ireland being replicated on a holodeck full time. The energy crisis just disappears. So, yeah, the will we ever get home is only important when it's decided to be important. Otherwise, we're okay.
This episode sins even deeper, and it says, did the second doctor ever make it back to Earth? Now you've added a whole other question.
Now we need
question.
That show. Yeah.
We already wanted to know. Now we need to know, what happened to this doctor?
Yeah, we do. And what's really interesting is that, so this is always going to happen when Star Trek jumps about in time, Discovery is set around about 3100, and this is set in 3074. So this is the same time period as Discovery. So in theory, this holographic Doctor, assuming the original holographic Doctor isn't still around, this one could be floating around during Discovery time. And we know that, this has blown my mind a little bit. This was such a perfect episode to watch, because the new Starfleet Academy show is coming, and that's set at the same time as Discovery. We know that Robert Picardo is reprising his role in some form, but we don't know if he's going to be a descendant of the creator, like we have with Dr. Soong and Data's creator, or it's going to be an EMH, a hologram. Is it going to be this doctor from Living Witness? It would be incredible if it opens with him saying, yep, I made it back. I'm not the original. This is how I'm 700 years in the future. It would be a deep cut, and it would be incredible.
And then Tom Riker shows up.
Yes. all of the duplicates. But he surprisingly looks like Jonathan Frakes looks now, conveniently.
No, I think somebody brought that up in the comments early on. I forgot that Picardo was going to be on. Sorry, Danae, Robert Picardo. I forgot he was going to be on.
Yep.
Starfleet Academy. I'm so excited about that series.
It's great.
But anyway,
great cast.
Holly Hunter, man. Holly Hunter can be doing network. Going to be weekly television. And Paul Giamatti. What is going on here?
It's incredible. It's so good.
Can we talk about, are we done with Senzo? Because I did want to say the backup doctor confuses me. It always,
yeah, no,
like, I just, like, No, I don't know that I have anything specific. I don't know that I have anything good scientific-y to say about it, but just the backup module just seems like it's mentioned, like it's referenced so rarely, it just seems like super convenient plot device. Like to do this episode, they needed something, you know, to bridge it. So they're like, oh yeah, we'll just use this random backup module we talked about making like two seasons ago. So I don't know.
Well, what's interesting is that you need somebody in the future that's disposable, because it has to be somebody that next week is still on the crew when you go back 700 years into the past. And it's really telling that the backup thing, I don't think, is ever used again. And there are times when it would be really, really useful to just save a backup, because every time the Doctor steps off the ship with his holographic emitter, that is, you're taking a risk that you now don't have a Doctor anymore, and your backup is Tom fucking Paris. Like, he's your next nurse. Like, that's it. He should never leave the ship. So yeah, it's weird that the backup generator is only mentioned in...
Well, they had Kes.
Yeah. No, Kes is gone by this point, isn't she?
Oh, that's true. By this point, she is gone. You're correct. She left, like, what, midway through this season, I think, is when she was gone?
Yeah, she... Oh, I thought she actually left in... No, yeah, she's in for a few episodes. Yeah, she's in a few episodes of season four. Yeah, but yeah, the backup thing is just, it's used for this plot and then never used again. So yeah, I definitely had that as a sin. There was one other one I really wanted to mention. Oh, this just really made me laugh, because when the Doctor is turned back on and he has his little freak out and he says, no, I don't believe it, and he runs away, man, is he lucky that he didn't run off the holodeck and get dissolved. Like, he's really lucky that there are emitters everywhere in the museum, because the curator could have been like, no, wait, don't run through that, and then he's gone, he just dissolved, and that's the end of his story.
I have a question, yes. It's probably a sin, but you can probably explain it to me too. How do four people beam onto a ship without, like, is it because their shields weren't up?
No, they were up.
So
well, the shields were up. They were at like 86% or something. Correct. But I don't, yeah, that kind of confused me too, to be honest.
How did these invaders get onto, and this is like the true version.
Yes.
When four intruders go on to engineering and they kill some people. Which, by the way, I love the sin from the chat. I don't know if I can find it quickly, but it was like not knowing that person's name. Like,
yeah, 7 of 9 plus someone else was taken.
Yeah,
it's brutal. You've got a crew of 100, and I think it's like 110, 150 people around there, and you couldn't name him.
It was Sir Ruthie.
Oh my god, that's amazing.
Injured a crewman hostage with a poor guy named. You actually know.
Fuck that guy.
Yeah, like, you should know that's Phil, right? Or whatever. It's like 7 of 9 and Phil.
And at this point, 7 of 9 has been there for maybe a month. Like, she hasn't been on the crew that long.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, yeah. She should be called something else. She should have the nickname. But anyway, so casualties have happened, and then they're doing this, like, invasion thing. And when they get to engineering, there's this, like, take everything that you can. I just... How can someone beam into engineering so specifically?
I know that I've watched too much Star Trek, because as soon, like, Harry says 86% shields, and then I heard the intruder alert siren, which is a specific siren that is used in, it's used in TNG. I think they use the same sound effect. And I was like, wait, that's the intruder alarm. That can't be right. And it's not right.
Too much Star Trek. If that
way too much, because before anybody says there are intruders in engineering, I'm like, wait, there can't be intruders. And then they confirm that there are intruders. And I'm like, no, there can't be intruders. Your shields are still up. So I kind of put it down to maybe the Doctor recreated the scenario wrong, but that's a huge mistake, because if Voyager doesn't have shields, they're dead. Like, you're destroyed, gone. That's it.
Maybe, because some of the commenters are making a comment they got in that 14%. I mean, maybe you could do that, but I would think the likelihood that you would hit that right spot when you were transporting
Hold on.
No. Yeah.
Hold on. I need your help. Because you guys are Star Trek peoples. So what you just said is there's holes.
Hold on.
So
oh, I'm wrong.
The shield turns into like Swiss cheese.
No, because no, you would just keep, all you would need is like a 1% gap, and then you'd keep targeting that 1% hole. It's a, like a strength thing. It's like the percentage is nonsense.
No.
I said that weird. I'm saying if that was possible.
Yes.
Okay.
I still have a hard time believing that like you would hit that.
There's just always this thing like you don't do, and you can't. Otherwise, every single episode is just beam me over to engineering and I'll blow up their warp core and beam me back out. And that's just how everybody
gets
their stuff.
I'll just beam a torpedo into the ship then. Oh. Forget that. Yeah. Warp core? I'm just going to beam a torpedo next to the warp core, which they do to a Borg ship at one point, but that's besides the point. But yeah, the beaming is a huge technical mishap that doesn't make any sense if you're a nerd.
You can beam through shields if you know the frequency. So I guess we have
you can, but
some explanation there.
There is no way they got the frequency. There's no way they found that out, and it isn't mentioned at all.
You don't know that because we're seeing...
Well, they wouldn't even know Voyager's ship. I mean, yeah.
I don't know. It's nonsense. I don't like it. Yeah, and even if you did know the frequency, you would do something else with it other than this. You don't need to beam people onto the ship. Just beam everyone into space.
That's right. Little bubbles. Little bubbles just floating everywhere.
Yep. Amazing.
I think that was probably my
man. Why have they never done that? Have they done that? Where they just beamed a bunch of people off a ship into space? Man.
Yes,
they have in Lower Decks.
Well, hold on a second. It was.
That's right.
There was that.
Like something like Romulans would do or something.
No, that's racist.
We're going to beam everybody in the space. I'm having a memory. Yeah.
Go on, Danae.
We're going into a nebula that warps things, and then all of a sudden the ship turns into an old ship and people are just like falling off of it into space. What was that from?
Oh, that was from the Fisher Quest. So the ships...
Fisher!
Fisher Quest. Damn it, Ty! We've done this before. Fisher Quest.
As in Fisher Price? No, I'm joking. Yeah. I'm joking.
Shut up. Because Fisher. That's how you say it in England. Fisher Quest.
Oh God, damn.
Do you have people with the last name Fisher in England?
No one, nobody. They'd be laughed into insanity.
We have so many things. It's just like we need a new name. It's like, well, I'm going to be Hunter, or I'm going to be Baker. I'm a Smith, so I'm just going to be Smith.
Yep, that's it. We started it. The Klingon ship gets turned into an old sailing barge.
That's what it was. Okay.
And then they're floating into space. Yeah.
Because they didn't have the shields that were with the nebula. I remember now.
Yeah.
Anyway, they shouldn't have been able to beam on. That's bullshit.
No. Correct. Completely agree.
That's a good call. I didn't even think about it.
Anything else we want to cover? I could go into more, but they were my big ones.
I didn't have anything else. Perfect episode. Go on.
I like how the chat sinned humanity. A lot of sins about just humanity still revising history. Uncomfortable appropriateness
for humans.
I guess we're talking about this, that kind of thing. And then we'll go over, I guess, the other ones when we get to the end of the show.
Yeah, hang around in the outtakes for some more listener-submitted sins, which you can also do by email or join us in the live show as well. But next week, thank you, Jonathan, for picking that episode for us. It is, I love it more now than I ever have. Like, it's not one that I revisit a lot. It's one that I'm going to revisit more, and it sums up the theme really well.
You know, Danae mentioned in the whole like sin and humanity thing. I remember like I did not even think about the parallels when I was picking. I was just picking some of my favorite episodes, and then we started watching this. I'm like, do I want to watch this right now? Like, this is kind of putting me. You know, this is kind of putting me in a weird mood because it's like there's too much of this is too realistic.
Nope. It's scary.
It's a bit reminded me about whenever I used to watch Grey's Anatomy all the time, and they did COVID during COVID, and I was just like, this. I don't want to be watching pandemic episodes while I'm in a pandemic, but at the same time, that's one of the beautiful things of storytelling.
Absolutely.
And I think Star Trek has done it over and over again as it hits on some themes in a season when I think it's important. And I wonder what was going on in this time, or if it was just like, you know, we want to do a revisionist history episode, because there's sometimes like I think we watched TOS and there were specific episodes about like specific wars or specific things going on in like U.S. history at that time.
A lot of Vietnam War stuff. Vietnam, yeah.
So it's like, oh yeah, that was going on at this time. Revisionist history is something, you know, it's obviously really relevant now, but I'm curious what the inspiration was, if it wasn't just like, we need to talk about this.
Yeah, back in 98.
Oh.
Like, what would it be?
Yeah, what would
it be? Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I think this is just kind of a, unfortunately, this is just a general problem that we've always had. So I think it's kind of one of those things that's sadly always kind of relevant. Yeah.
Womp womp, way to end on a really bummer note.
Yes. But Star Trek being relevant, as relevant in the 90s, 70s, 80s, 60s as it is today. Yeah, that's the message. Yeah, love this episode, even though it's hard. I think we're going to stay in this fan favorite theme for at least the next few weeks, because you all are submitting some incredible episodes that, selfishly, heck, I just want to watch them. Next week, we will be covering Star Trek TNG Pegasus, Season 7, Episode 12.
Oh, I love this episode.
I can hear the collective, yes, from the crowd.
I love horses.
Yo.
It's about horses. Go with that.
100%.
Sorry, I was just going to say, I'm not a huge Season 7 fan overall, although All Good Things is one of the best finales ever. But the Pegasus is one of the exceptions to that season. It's a great episode.
If you don't like techno jargon, brace for impact, because there's definitely techno jargon in this one. But this is an all-time classic episode of Star Trek. It's so good. I'm so excited. Thank you, Daniel, for submitting that one. So yeah, that's what we'll be covering next week. If you have any questions, emails, queries, qualms, or updates, or anything you want to share with us, send it to captainspod@cinemasins.com. Join our lovely CinemaSins people on our lovely Discord. We have a Captain's Pod channel where we talk spoilers about the new shows, Star Trek in general. We share memes and we love each other with our Star Trek appendages. That's discord.gg/cinemasins. It's way less horny than that, and unlike the Pegasus. And yeah, so just do that stuff. We'll be live next Monday, the 24th of February, potentially at 1 p.m. Central Time, but we'll update you in the Discord and on Blue Sky if any of that changes. Thank you, Jonathan, for joining us. Anything
you
want to plug before we beam you into into space?
I mean, I'm on some of the socials. I'm still on Twitter, and I'm on Blue Sky and Letterboxd, and on all those, I think I'm Sam Loomis 13. So I pretty much just stick with Sam Loomis 13. It's easier. I don't have a good memory.
Nice.
So yeah,
amazing.
And listen to this podcast. Listen to our other great podcast, Recotopia.
Yes.
Which might be better because I edit it. I'm just kidding.
Amazing.
I just want to brag about my editing.
That is not the way that was gonna go. That was amazing.
No, I'm joking. But that's Chris and Chris Atkins and Jeremy Scott and Aaron Dicer.
Amazing.
Recommending movies and talking about fun stuff. I think they're about to do their like end of the year or their best of the year one, which is always
that's coming up.
Which is always fun. So since I don't have a podcast, I guess I'll just prep all my I cannot talk today. I guess I'll just shout out all my friends' podcasts. So.
Amazing. Danae, anything to plug? You got anything this week?
Nothing really this week. I mean, you can still catch the podcast that I am attempting to create as I go, called Search for Spark. And you can find that on patreon.com/searchforspark. That's SPARK, not Spock, for you Star Trek lovers. like the spark of life, like spark as in fire.
What if Spock is your spark?
That could happen on an episode. So right now I'm still just beta testing it. So it is about once a week I'll release some content and get your feedback on it before I decide what I'm actually going to be launching out to the public. So you can.
And Danae shared some of that content with me, and it was awesome, and I highly recommend it as well.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Thirded or seconded? Seconded. Thirded? Seconded. Do you count as one of the three?
Too late. I got there before
you did. So. Damn it. Well, until next week, go and do all of those things. I'm Captain Ian, and it's history has been abused from me.
I just happen to be an invulnerable to phaser fire, but I appreciate the compliment from me.
Oh no, I lost mine. Oh no, are you so proud you'd let your people die before you humble yourself?
Ooh. Live long and controversial, Podspur.
Thanks for listening. Want to connect with the show? Our hailing frequencies are always open through captainspod@cinemasins.com. Like, comment, and subscribe on your podcast player of choice, and be sure to visit cinemasins.com.
I have this idea. I saw somebody do this on a short, and they took a piece of plastic, like a really long piece of plastic, and they just rolled it out over the areas that they didn't want to have snow.
Yeah.
And then after snow, they just kind of like shuffle the it off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So I want to try that.
And
so
just shuffle it all onto the sidewalk to be a nuisance to everybody else. Yeah.
Exactly.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So I'm gonna try that. I have a king-sized mattress protector, which is really thick plastic.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just gonna cut it open.
Yeah.
And see what it looks like all spread out. And then see if I can cover my walkway up to my front door and possibly part of my driveway, but that might be a little bit crazy.
And then you're going to get like half an inch of snow after you do all that.
It's just canceled. Storm has been canceled. You're just the crazy lady that has a mattress protector outside the drive.
Iris, I sat down with her on a snow day last week and we recorded something together. And you guys, she was so cute on that episode. She just,
oh my gosh,
this is the
so adorable.
And she was just like this, blah, 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 blah. And she's just talking about it. And she's like, well, that's what I think. And I said, hey, do you want to record a podcast episode with me? And she's like, sure. She goes, hi, everybody. Welcome to my podcast. Just like right
that's
away.
That's my favorite part is that you do like this transition and immediately she does the intro and takes over.
It was amazing.
I will tell you something to be prepared for as someone who had a young daughter on one of his podcasts like 7 years ago. She still talks about it and she still explains how she's super popular because of it and how she should get to come to,
yes,
she needs to do other podcasts with us because everybody loves her. And you know,
we're doing a series right now. She asked me to read her book at night. I try to read something to her. She usually asks for one or two.
Yeah.
And the other night I didn't want to get out of bed. I was like, I'm not going to get out of bed for a book. And she goes, well, can you please make one up? And I was like, of course I can make something up. So I started.
Are you kidding?
Story. And I kind of wrap up my story and she goes, okay, chapter two.
That's amazing.
But what was really fascinating for me about the most recent episode, we were talking about, so she was having like a bullying situation at recess and she ended up asking me to help her kind of figure out how to get through it. And I hadn't really circled back to that in a few weeks. And I didn't realize that she had sort of not needed this coping mechanism anymore, which was great to hear. Like I genuinely in the moment say like, do you still need to use this coping mechanism? I don't use those terms, but you know, do you need to do this anymore? She's like, no. I said, or do you have everything you need inside of you? And she says, I have everything I need inside of me. And I was like, man, I'm so glad that we're having this conversation. And also capturing in the moment is really special as well. But it was nice to get caught up with her that she's, I don't know, kind of feeling more confident in her new school and talking to this older kid that kind of keeps razzing her a bit. So, and she told me about a moment when he was struggling on the playground by himself and she went to go comfort him and become his friend. So there's just so much to learn from her. And
it really like it plays like a Steven Spielberg movie or something. Like it's really like kind of super sweet and you're like, that's not believable, it just happens in stories. But she's telling you this thing that happened and this moment of kindness that she had upon her, and it does give you hope for humanity. It's like, man, if there are kids out there that can find a way to be kind to people that have not been kind, how much could that change?
Yeah. It's debilitating becoming a parent because all of a sudden you're like, every decision is now the most important decision that I've ever made. And because I am somebody who overthinks every decision, it's been a lot of mental fatigue. And so now that she's getting older and able to do more things without my help, it's shifting from her needing to have help, you know, getting food out of the refrigerator to coping with how to feel like her identity is solid inside of these evolving social structures at school and things like that. So those are really interesting things I think to talk about. And that's definitely going to show up on the podcast because that's my life. But I'm also excited to just talk about other things. I have a list of all of these articles that I've been saving that I just want to talk to somebody about. And I'm like, oh, I could just put that on. Hey guys, yeah. I'm going to go through all of my episode, all the things that I've been saving that I'm just curious about and educate myself on some stuff. So that could kind of be fun.
And you can ask people about how Star Trek Shields work. See what, yes. see what kind yes. of response you
Swiss
get.
Cheese.
Hose.
Swiss cheese.
Like cheese.
Yeah. I also want to show you guys a self-portrait that she drew of me.
Oh, that's amazing. What are you holding?
I mean,
is it an apple?
I don't know what picture you're showing me. I just see Danae in front of me.
I remember like a kid being annoyed at when I drew myself, I'd have to put glasses on because I didn't have contact lenses until I was like 15. And it was always annoying that I had to draw myself with glasses because I couldn't draw glasses properly. I was like my face is passable there, but now I have to put glasses on it and the glasses look dumb because you can't get the perspective on the arms right. So yeah, glasses are tricky. You've made it hard for her.
Oh, she was really impressed. And I genuinely was super impressed. She's getting...
You should, yeah. You should put contacts in and be like, now draw contacts.
Oh. She told me the day, she's like, I don't like how I look. And I said, oh, that makes my heart hurt. I'm sorry that you feel that way. Like, what is there something about the way that you look that you don't like? Instead of saying like, stop it, you shut up, you're beautiful. Like, I just like, okay, you don't like the way you look. Let's talk about what it is. I was curious. And she says, I don't have glasses like you do.
Oh,
she just wants to look like her mama, and because she doesn't have them, it makes her feel awkward.
That's sweet.
And I was like, that's really sweet. Okay, that's not like, you know, my teeth are crooked or whatever.
Yeah,
this is interesting though, because my daughter likes to wear glasses too, and it's like I remember being a kid hating that I had to wear glasses.
Uh-huh.
Like I didn't know any, you know, and now it's like I want to wear glasses. It looks better. I'm like, okay.
It wasn't until I got to college when David Tennant was the doctor, and he had these big square glasses that he would put on. Suddenly glasses were great, and I'm like, where were you 10 years ago, asshole?
That makes sense.
Like, now everybody wants my glasses, and just a matter of years earlier you were like bullied for it. So there has been a cultural shift with glasses, as I'm sure it happens over time and ebbs and flows.
I also told her that we could just pick up some frames and she could wear glasses if she wants to. Like, if this is part of the style that you want to have, it's not too difficult to just put some glasses on. And she said, I totally forgot about sunglasses. When I was in radio, it would be the perfect time to have these chats because the audience is like 90% women or something. And most of them were mothers because of the radio station that I was on, most of the people that were listening were like, were in that genre. And I wasn't. I joked around about being the parent to dogs and that I was equally able to relate to any parent because I have dogs.
Oh, I'm sure they love that.
I loved goading them into like that. Oh, it's different. I'm like, no, it's the same. I am still cleaning up poop and pee on the carpet instead of in a diaper. It's really similar.
And having conversations. Yeah.
We talk all night long.
Sending them to their rooms.
They're hairy. Kids are hairy. Like, there's a lot.
I have spaceships and they take a lot of care. And when they break, I'm inconsolable. Like, I couldn't show Voyager off today because Voyager is broken.
Oh, no.
I can relate. I can honestly absolutely relate to what you guys are talking about. It's the same thing.
Very similar to your 3-year-old daughter or your 3-year-old daughter falling over and knocking her head on the bathtub and having a Looney Tunes fucking thing.
Yeah,
this is something that happened.
I get it. Like, the nacelle is off. The nacelle is literally on the floor.
I'm sure the stress that both of us felt in those two situations were exactly the same.
100%. So what happened with Voyager, it's way worse. It's way worse than the bathtub thing. Way worse. This is a design fault. I don't think you can blame a design for your daughter falling into the bathtub. But Voyager, the way it's on the stand is that if you nudge a table, it yeets itself off of the stand and into the Delta Quadrant. Oh. It is the worst stand I've ever seen. And it fell off like 5 times. And on the 5th time, it broke and it was in two pieces. And I was like, huh, I didn't realize that Voyager had a source of separation mode. Turns out it doesn't. But my model does. And that's where it's now. I could go and get it, but it hurts to parade my failure in front of the live audience.
Wow. That's really, yeah. The shields have holes. That's the problem. Is it
holes? Yeah. The hole being the stand. The stand was the hole in that situation. God damn, I love that episode. Oh,
stop it. Save it for the show. What's wrong with you? Go.
No, it's so good, Danae. It's so good. Gosh.
Premature Star Trekulation.
Ew, but also yes.
But also exactly.
Yes.
Glad to make you laugh and be disgusted all at the same time.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.